This next segment here, we are trying to get on Liz Claman from Fox Business Network. She's been on the show before, a recurring guest, one of our favorites. We love Liz. Turns out she can't make it on until probably about September. So that's fine. You know, the Fox people, they don't owe us anything. We'll take her when we get her, right? They said, how would you like this guy? And I said, really? I didn't think we had the connections to make this happen. I only thought we had connections to make Liz Claman happen. I am overjoyed to do this next segment because this gentleman really has such a varied background that he brings to his position. One-time minor league baseball player, subsequently then moving into the trading realm, getting very heavy into commodities. He's doing commodity trading and other forms there, catches the attention of the TV folks over at CNBC. And before you know it, he's participating in one of their programs over there. He's over on Fast Company. And then subsequently goes to work for Fox News and now Fox Business Network. And he now is in the position of doing a program that it really is the centerpiece of their primetime hours. This makes him really one of the centerpieces of the entire network, one of the guys that they are looking to really build around and consolidate as they continue to go forward. So we always love talking to interesting, varied people, and this guy really fits the bill. It's our pleasure to bring onto the FDH Lounge Eric Bolling. Eric, it's a pleasure to have you on. Sir, how are you tonight?
Well, you know what, boy, I have to live up to some pretty, pretty hefty build-up there. But listen, I'll do my best. But thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm thrilled to be with you.
Well, we try to make that a trademark, Eric. We try to put everybody over pretty strong when we bring them on. And it's amazing because, you know, you are a guy who really is omnipresent. It's one of these things. It's absolutely surreal, Eric. I get up before I go to work today. I flip on the TV, I'm sitting there in my pajamas, and there you are on Fox and Friends. I mean, it's
it's
amazing.
Well, I'll tell you're 100% right. I spent the first 20 years of my life or so playing baseball, you know, from Little League all the way up. I loved it. Absolutely lived for the sport. That's all I wanted to do, eat, drink, and sleep baseball. Made it to drafted by the Pirates, was playing in minor league system. I blew my rotator cuff one day and was cut 3 days later. And if anyone's ever been through this, the most devastating thing that can ever happen to you when you put so much time into something. Just happened to be lucky enough to be kind of dating a girl whose father was an oil trader, and he said, "Yeah, give this a shot." I put about 15 or 20 years, maybe 18 years into that, and had a lot of success with that. And just about towards the end of that time period, CNBC happened to be on the trading floor saying, "Hey, why is oil $50 a barrel?" Remember, first time up, mm-hmm. about 2004 or so. And I said, "Oh, well, you know," I gave them 2 minutes of my best 2 minutes, and they said, "Hey, would you do this for us once a week?" And then it became once a day, and then one day they said, "Hey, we want to do a show called Fast Money. Would you help us develop that show?" And I said, "Sure." And I put that show together. We got that on the map. And, you know, and then I got tapped on the shoulder one day, and it was Mr. Roger Ailes. And he said, "You know, if you want to be in TV, I'm the guy you want to work for or with." And I said, "You're certainly right, sir." And he said, "Come on over to Fox Business and Fox News." And that's where I've been ever since. Yeah, so it's about, you know, three and a half years. So it's been great. It's been a great run.
It's been a heck of a run. In terms of tracing the chronology, something that I'm curious about, I wonder if there was any kind of an overlap at all. When you're coming up through the Pirates system, was there any overlap with the ascendancy of either Barry Bonds or Bobby Bonilla?
Both.
Okay.
Bobby Bonilla was there when I was there. In fact, he was playing center field at the time. This is how I got drafted. I was playing college baseball in Florida, Winter Rollins College in Florida, playing third base. And, you know, they came down to dedicate a stadium. The big leaguers came down. And Don Robinson was pitching. Bobby Bo was in center. Dale Barrow was playing short. And at the top of the second inning, Don Robinson, being the cocky guy that he was, threw me a fastball over the plate, and I deposited in left center. And the team is laughing, the Pirates are laughing at him. And I got back to third base after the inning, and the third base coach was Jimmy Leland. And he said, "You know, we're going to keep our eye on you now, kid. You want to play ball?" And I said, "Absolutely." So that's how I got drafted. But that was Bobby Bowe, but Barry Bonds came, I think, like a year later, maybe right around the same time. I was there when I was like 2 years before Daryl Strawberry was drafted number one, just to give you a little bit of time perspective. 2 years after Daryl was drafted in the first round.
Okay. In terms of just on the same subject before I move on here, I just wanted to pick your brain on this since you know an awful lot about baseball and love it and follow it so much. We've had a theory here at FDH we've been talking about the last couple of months here that the number of aces, depending on how you define it, I'd say it's gone from about 10 to about 25 in the last 2 to 3 years. And we can quibble about who would qualify and who hasn't. A, would you tend to agree with that? And B, other than the cyclical nature of position dominance, is there anything you would attribute that
to? Boy, I don't know what's going on. Yes, I'll agree with you, and I don't know why it is. I mean, cyclicality in baseball, I don't know. I don't know if you can just write it off at that. I mean, look what we have. We have two perfect games this year. You know, two perfect games this year. Five no-hitters. Just what's going on? Are they... You know, was steroids a huge, huge thing? We're just kind of finally feeling the end results of people getting off steroids. Were the balls juiced before and they're not? There's so many conspiracy theories going around. But baseball, like, I guess everything is cyclical. Let's throw out the conspiracy theories and, yeah, sure, cyclical.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, there's any number of different explanations you could attach to that. And as a matter of fact, I mean, and on the subject of that and the many other things, it's very interesting because I really feel like I can identify with what you're trying to do at 8 o'clock right now. We try to take a broad scope on this show, and really what you're doing, this new show is fascinating to me in terms of you know, the way that you guys are approaching this, because it's everything obviously ties back to finance or money in some way. But with right. what you are doing with Money Rocks, you're bringing these folks on there, and you're getting them to describe whether it be their success stories, their business approaches, whatever the case may be. It's a really interesting and way more expansive approach than I think we've seen from a program.
Well, what we're doing, and again, the name is kind of a misleading name. It's Money Rocks. I mean, here's the mission statement right here. We're unapologetically pro-capitalism, and we really are out to defend the American dream. The American dream is awesome. People can come from the wrong side of the tracks with no education and work their way through the ranks and become wealthy people. We also look at the political side of money, too, where we'll bring in a congressperson or a senator and say, hey, what are you doing? You're going to raise our taxes? We want to make sure that you're really speaking for all of us. So tonight on the show tonight, we had this little town in California called Bell, California, mm-hmm. 2.5 square miles. City manager gave himself $787,000 a year. The police chief, $457,000 a year. That's more than Mr. Barack Obama, the president, makes. So we're calling them out. We spent most of the hour on it just saying, hey, you know, these are Americans. These are people who work hard, pay their taxes, live right, and then you cockroaches. I actually call them a cockroach on the air. I hope I don't get in trouble for that. But you guys, you just put your hand in their pockets and put the money in your pockets. We broke that story 2 weeks ago, and we've been all over it. It's gotten a lot of media attention lately, but we're really, really hitting home. Tonight we have Controller of California on there. We have the governor's office. We have a statement from the attorney generals, and we have two people who are in those city council meetings talking about how outraged they were that they weren't getting the right answers.
It's very interesting as well, because when you look at something like this, and invariably when politicians are forced to react to something like this, it becomes something of a football in that nature. You may very well succeed in driving a wedge here between the Democratic nominee, Attorney General Brown, and his biggest base of support, the unions. And I've been reading profiles about how they're doing a lot for him without a lot of explicit promises in return. But having said that, he's going to have to crack down on more of this these misadventures from the public sector here, and he thinks that's going to cause him some problems with the government unions.
Well, let me just tell you, we had the governor's office. Aaron McClure is the spokesperson for Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was on, and he was railing on Governor Jerry Brown for looking the other, you know, turning a blind eye to some of this stuff for the last few years. And he called them out, and then we, like I said, we got the governor, the attorney general's office to comment, and then the controller of California, who's up for election himself. I said, hey, what have you been doing? You know, where have you been all these years? How are these guys basically stealing taxpayer money and you're not catching them. Now all of a sudden we highlight it and you're on the case. I mean, where's my perp walk? And they said, well, I'm not sure we're going to see any perp walks, but we're not going to let it happen again. So we're here. It's a really, really great opportunity to do a bunch of things on TV. We're having some fun. By the way, we're up against Bill O'Reilly on the Fox Network. We better do something different and creative, or we're going to get eaten alive.
Who you've sat in for, among other things here. Again, I've said, you know, you're all over the mothership. You know, you've sat in for him. You might be on Fox and Friends. I see you on Saturday mornings on the finance shows. So,
boy, you did your homework. I do every Saturday morning on the finance show. I'll be on Fox and Friends again tomorrow morning. And I'll tell you, the most interesting time of my life was sitting in for Mr. Bill O'Reilly at the end of last year a couple of times. But I also fill in for Beck and Cavuto, too, when they're on vacay.
There's another
good opportunity. Good fun.
Oh, sure. There's another friend of the Sports Talk Network. He hasn't been on our show yet. He's been on another show here. I don't know how much interaction you've had with him on any of the programs. Mr. Layfield has been a friend of the network.
Great guy.
Yeah,
just
have
a
you done
great
a bunch
guy.
Of, yeah,
get him on your show. You need him on your show. He's just a really, really smart guy, and you know he was a professional wrestler too, so he's got the sports tie-in, but smart guy, does investing, and just a really colorful character.
Oh, he really is. Yeah, they broke the mold when they made that guy, and you know, he's quite a character. You've got an interesting collection of people over there. Prior to speaking with you, the only one that we had really gotten a chance to talk to was Liz, you know, and she brings her background in more traditional type news, some feature type reporting.
Yeah.
It's great how they're bringing in, you know, they're not afraid to bring in people like her, people like you, with the non-traditional type of backgrounds here, because it gives you a much more varied approach as a network than what your competitors have.
Yep, and you know, and we just recently added Charlie Gasparino, who is a real, real hard-hitting, you know, Wall Street reporter, economy reporter, a great addition to the team, too. But it's a very, very, you know, we're 3 years into it, and we're finding our way around. We're finding out what people want. We're definitely finding that there's a tie between Main Street and Washington now. Wall Street's kind of been bullied up, beaten up a little bit. They're kind of on their heels, but everything that goes on in D.C. really affects the bottom line in Main Street. We're really opening, you know, shedding a light, put a big old spotlight on it, maybe a magnifying glass, and we're getting some eyeballs. We're getting starting to make people really say, hey, you know, you guys have our back. You're not in there for the, you know, the Wall Street fat cats. You're there for Main Street, and that's what we really try to do.
It's funny you mention that, Eric, because, you know, when speaking with Liz previously, that was a point of conversation she brought up, and I emphasized, I thought this was a very good thing, the emphasis on small business, something that she found at CNBC was not really that welcome. Well, you can't trade on these things, and she didn't like that. She likes the freedom to cover this here, and I said to her, you know, I said, hey, it might sound kind of cheesy, but as far as I'm concerned, the backbone of this country is small business, you know, so it's good to see that you guys are covering that among, you know, everything else in the big picture, Eric.
Oh, yeah, you're 100% right. You know, you've heard the number, you know, 70% of all jobs created in the country are on the backs or on the heels of small business, whether directly or indirectly, and that's who you got to really be careful for. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that the numbers that the politicians will throw at you. Mr. Obama says no new taxes for anyone under 250, earning $250K. But the problem is, most small businesses file their taxes under an individual return. So, a lot of small businesses will be above that 250 mark, and they're going to get their taxes raised. So they're not hiring right now, and that's really the reason why unemployment rate is 9.5% when it's only supposed to be, you know, under 8 by now with the trillion-dollar stimulus we gave them. But so, yeah, we're on it. We're keeping an eye on all that stuff.
Well, and when it comes to these promises of the no taxes for people under 250K, it's interesting because just another coincidence, one of our guests later tonight, Colin Delaney from ePolitics.com. I like to spar with that guy when he's on. He's a little left to center. That makes his politics different than mine. I threw something at him he couldn't rebut, Eric. I said, what about the smokes tax? I said, what could be more regressive than that? Obama signed that into law not long after he came into office. Even Colin couldn't deny that one there. So it's kind of interesting. There have been some things, and I know you're looking at the fine
print. I have another one for you. Ready for this one?
Yeah.
There's a gold coin tax where if you buy a gold coin that costs over $600, you know where they've stuck that little tax in there that's brand new? You know, guess which bill? It's not in the financial reg bill. Which bill do you think they put that one in?
Was that health care?
Yes, sir. The health care bill.
Wow.
They put a gold coin tax in the health care bill. And remember, that was supposed to reform the way we do business in health care. I'm not really sure why a gold coin tax is in a health care bill, but it is.
Yeah, and the tanning tax, too. And that's, you know, I'll tell you what, it's easy to make light of what I'm about to say here and point out, but there are a lot of people, just if you look at it culturally, when you look at people who basically were for Obama because they were against, quote-unquote, the religious right, I saw an awful lot of, quite frankly, strippers out there in the last election who, oh, hey, we're for Obama. I mean, who gets hit more hard than something like the strippers on the tanning tax? I mean, that right there is going to be very interesting as far as attacking your base.
Well, there's news tomorrow. The second or third, whatever season of Jersey Shore starts in Snooki, and the situation they're hit the hardest with the tanning tax.
That's a very good point. As far as your show goes, 8 o'clock, Eric, I'd like to ask you about, you know, the change in perspective that you've had to have doing something like this. It strikes me that when you were on at 5 o'clock, when you were doing the previous show, Happy Hour, it seems like the star of that show essentially is the headlines of the day, the things that you're reacting to, the major storylines of the financial world versus something like this. It seems like the star at 8 o'clock is the brand that you are putting together, that you are central to, with your freedom to shape this thing, with the network's determination to go in this direction. What's it like to go from being not necessarily on the periphery, but sort of a commentator on the events of the day to somebody who is really in the thick of it as far as shaping a brand that's going to carry the show?
You know, you hit the nail on the head. You're right. At 5 o'clock, the market is just closed, and you really have to stay on, you know, what's affecting people's money, their pocketbook. Today, right now, this happened. Goldman said this, or a lawmaker said that. But now, we're under a different purpose and pressure. I even say pressure. I'm up against Bill O'Reilly. I'm up against who's the knucklehead at MSNBC, Olbermann, Nancy Grace, and then soon to be Elliot Spitzer at 8 o'clock. We have to have a very, very healthy serving of opinion. The problem is, money and opinion sometimes don't mix. They're a little oil and watery, so we have to be very entertaining, opinionated, and always have that eye on how the money is affecting, how the story affects the money. A lot of plates to be spinning, and I think we're doing a really good job. We just knocked the ball out of the park tonight with the Bell California crew. By the way, that re-airs tonight at 11 as well. It's a lot of pressure. It can't be all politics because Fox News is doing that better than anyone in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of everything, a little cross section of politics, entertainment, some sports, some, you know, anything that has to do with money and it affects your wallet and your 401k and your job, and you know, so it's a lot to ask, but we have a great team and we're doing it. We're putting it on.
As far as the politics go and your assessment of that, and my, from what I can glean from having watched you over time, I'd say your politics and mine are fairly similar. I'm one of these public policy nerds that's always looking at the outcome and the effects on public policy. I tend to subscribe to the notion that anybody who's looking for a sustainable move away from the policies of right now probably ought to be wishing that the Republicans come up just this short in November, because when I look at the cadavers that the Republicans have running the House and the Senate on both sides there, I mean, they just look like they would be such convenient punching bags for Obama, who's the most gifted politician probably of the last quarter century, you know, as opposed to having Pelosi and Reid still in there, or Chuck Schumer if Reid loses. It seems to me that depriving Obama of that target might be the better long-term thing here. How do you see it?
It's a really, really interesting argument. By the way, I'm a political junkie. I just grew up in Chicago, live in New York and New Jersey area right now, so I'm in pretty good political company here. I love it. I love the politics. Good story. Good thought here. Does the right, I'm a conservative, does the right take, you know, maybe 35 seats in the House and maybe only 6 Senate seats, doesn't hold the majority but has a real strong voice in both houses, and really put the pressure on the liberals and the left to really make change, or you're going to have a sweeping, massive change over the next time around and maybe lose the White House in 2012. That might be the best thing that could happen, because then they're still on the hook for holding control, and you can really pressure them. They'll not be able. Log jams in Congress are good, by the way. Log jams in Washington are pretty darn good. You don't get slapped with these health care bills and trillion-dollar stimulus packages and God forbid we get cap and trade, another trillion-dollar thing per year. You know, logjam wouldn't be a bad thing. Logjam wouldn't be a bad thing.
I understand that point of view, but where I tend to differ from it, if at all, is, and again, this goes to me being an idealist, I like to see bad things rolled back. I'm not a big status quo kind of guy. Don't make things worse. I like to see bad things rolled back. And I understand what you're saying, that, you know, you've got basically trench warfare and nothing worse is being done over a period of time. But the right president and the right Congress could actually accomplish positive things together.
Don't disagree with you at all, sir. My problem is I can think of one guy that I would like to see president from the Republican side, one person on the Republican side. I mean, I'm a huge Sarah Palin fan. I love the Tea Party. I love everything they're doing about shrinking the spending and the deficit and all that. But there's only one that really strikes me as the one that could pull off the presidency as a Republican and do it well, and it's Paul Ryan. Other than that, I don't know anyone. I really, you know, Mitt Romney maybe, but you go down the list, you go, I don't know. I don't know if we can win that one.
It's really interesting, too, because with Sarah Palin, something that I'm seeing, you know, and I come from kind of this shrinking paleocon type school here. I'm what I would call a common sense non-interventionist on this. It seemed to me she was doing a pretty good job of bridging that gap, but as she seems to be going more and more in the neocon direction here, it is opening up an interesting argument in the Republican Party. You've seen Ann Coulter recently and Bill Kristol, and that's a debate that it seems like would be healthy to have, as far other than just assuming say nuking Iran or whatever is necessarily the best option. That could be another thing that comes onto the table in the next 12 months or so.
According to Mr. Ahmadinejad, it's going to happen, you know, in the next 3 months. Someone's going to nuke Iran and maybe one other country. So Sarah Palin, big fan. I've interviewed her a couple times. I like her politics. I think she's better for the conservative party being the one who goes out there and backs the right conservatives and helps them. I don't think she really wants to be president right now. I don't know that, you know, I just, she really, it's right. You know, the best president would be of all of them, Glenn Beck. I'd love to see that guy run, but I think he's so entrenched in you know, changing the world, getting people to realize what's going on, that would actually sidetrack him from his agenda and his plan.
It's interesting you mention him, because especially like from listening to his radio program, I always sort of felt like he was kind of an influence on me, but more what he used to do. He used to be more of a blend of the serious and some of the less serious things, but I feel like I learn more from him now. I maybe don't have as much in common with
him
stylistically.
Yeah, he was an entertainer before. He was a showman before. Smart. Right now, he's teaching America what's going on, and I'm a huge Glenn Beck fan. In fact, they let me sit in when he's out sometimes. I'm a big fan of the man, and I've read all his books. You read his books, you really get a sense of what makes Glenn tick. He's the real deal. He's a brilliant man. I mean, some people say, no, I mean, you'll read the liberal blogs, and they tear him to shreds. They don't know him. He sees dead people. It just, he sees things 2-3 steps ahead. If you know, and in chess, that can be literally, you know, 3 billion moves 3 steps ahead. So he does see things in what's ahead of us. And he's been very, very accurate, too.
That's interesting for our audience to hear that that's what he's really like, because that's the impression that I get. To bring this full circle, start to recap here, Eric, I'd just like to kind of get you to compare and contrast, if you will. You mentioned the pressure of being on now, the 8 o'clock heavyweights that you're up against. Sans the, I agree, knuckleheaded MSNBC, but everybody else you're up against at 8 o'clock there. How do you compare the pressure that you're under, the pressure that Mr. Ailes and Murdoch have put you under with this amount of pressure, this positive pressure they have in you to carry prime time versus what you used to do? And I had read the story about how you once lost $2 million in one day on a commodity swing. Is it apples and oranges, or how would you compare
it? No, they're all the same. It literally is the same adrenaline. It's the same self. Either, you know, eat or be eaten, live or die. It's really the sports background analogy is perfect. Win the game or they're going to beat you. It's all the same. That's the absolute true story. I promised at the time he was a 5-year-old son that I'd read a storybook to his class, you know, months in advance. The day came and I just happened to have the wrong trading position on. He's like, "Daddy, you're coming to read Spider and the Fly?" If you've ever read Spider and the Fly, it's one of the most compelling books at any age. It's just a really, you'll read it, and if you're anywhere between 5 and 50, you get it, or 75, you'll get it. So the problem was I had the wrong trading position. I was losing money and made one fatal mistake. I said, at the end of the book, I said, "Any questions?" And it's so provocative, so thought-provoking. 20 little hands went up at the same time, and I was like, "Oh no!" And it literally took me almost 2 hours to get through the 20 questions and answering why did the spider trick the fly, and it was so. But my son was so proud of me, so proud I did it. And when I got to work, the people that worked for me were just looking at me like, "Are you kidding me? Where have you been?" You know, and I was just like, "Look, I had to do what I had to do. I couldn't have my cell phone in there. Couldn't get myself out of the trade. It was one of those things. Just one of those things."
Well, you know what? It was the right thing to do, and with the trajectory, the way that it's played out for you here, it's good to see that in the end everything has worked out well for you. I have to say, Eric, I mean, my expectations tonight were met exactly, if not exceeded. I mean, you are the quintessential lounge guest. You can talk about anything. We greatly appreciated your time. We like your new show a lot. We hope it's going to do very well, and we'd love to have you back sometime, Eric, to catch up with you.
You say the word. I'm proud to do it. I love to do it. And thanks a lot. Thanks to all your listeners. Maybe they'll tune in one of these nights, 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock Eastern.
I hope so. Eric, it was a thrill for me personally. Thank you so much, sir.
I'm going to give your best to Lizzie Clayman. I'll see her tomorrow.
Awesome. We love her to death. Thank you so much, Eric.
Good night.
Good night. Eric Bowling, everybody.